So this class is called Water and Salt. And water is a pretty vital element in life. Do you know the number one most important ingredient for life is oxygen? And that's not a surprise. You can go only really a few minutes without oxygen. But many people are living a life that's not abundant health purely because they're not getting enough oxygen into their body. And we talked about the importance of nose breathing. It's also important to make sure you're breathing in fresh air. That's pretty important. That's the most vital element needed for life. We also looked at how in the cell you can get 18 times more energy coming out of the cell that has oxygen in it. So there are four vital elements needed for life. So I'm going to write the four vitals here. Four vitals. So the four vital elements needed for life, thank you. Number one is oxygen. There's no doubt about that. Number two is water. And that's not a surprise. You can go 3 minutes without oxygen, but I think you can only go about 3 days without water. But we had a young woman attend our program and she had advanced breast cancer. She was only 35. It was like a boulder on her chest. She was a very beautiful young woman. And I wanted to know why this lady, she'd even written a book on the acid alkaline balance in the body. She was a doctor of chiropractic. How could this be? And then I discovered that she used to do body sculpting. And with body sculpting, it's like bodybuilding for women. And then a few programs later, her girlfriend did the program and she showed me some pictures of when she was body sculpting, and she just had this thin G-string on, I think, and they, you know, they show themselves. And she said that they don't drink water for 3 days before they show, because that they get so dehydrated that the muscles and all the blood vessels stand out, and that apparently is supposed to be attractive when they're showing. But oh, at a cost, at a great cost, that unfortunately this young woman, her cancer was so advanced, she only lived another 3 months. So at a great cost. So water is the second most vital element needed for life. The third most vital element needed life, and this surprises a lot of people, is sodium. A vital element needed for life. Number four is potassium. So in my class, the last class of the night, I want to pursue water and sodium. Now sodium, as it's found in nature, in the highest amount is seawater. And seawater contains 92 minerals. In fact, seawater is called an isotonic solution. Isotonic solution means basically it's the exact same mineral and proportion and balance as is found in body fluids, in the blood. In fact, did you know that in the war, the Navy, if one of their sailors needed a blood transfusion, they would transfuse with seawater, because it is the exact same mineral balance and proportion as is found in the blood. It is the third most vital element for life, is sodium, and yet, as you can see by this, God designed that this sodium come into our body the way it's found in nature, with all of its minerals. Sodium in seawater makes up about 30%, and chloride, it makes up about approximately 50%. So these are the first crystals formed when the water is evaporated from the seawater. So the first crystal forms are scooped up, bleached white, aluminium's put with it, and there's table salt. And when we looked at the heart last night, we touched on this and we saw that table salt, with only its two minerals, definitely is a big contributing factor in high blood pressure because it causes an imbalance of minerals in and out of the cell. The salt that we use is Celtic salt. And Celtic salt, Bahar salt, is very similar. It contains 82 minerals. So where are the other 10? Well, they're in such pico proportions, barely measurable, so it's inevitable that a few are lost. But with the Celtic salt, it's a hand-harvested salt in the old Celtic tradition, and it's harvested in Brittany on the coast of France. And this coast has big peninsulas going out like this, and the sea flats basically look like this. And as you can see there, the peninsulas poke right out, so the wind is constantly blowing across there, so the water evaporates very quickly. And because it evaporates very quickly, those crystals are formed, they're harvested and sealed. And that's why there are so many minerals in it. There is even iodine in it. It's in parts per million and it's locked up in the crystal. And that's why when I buy the Celtic salt, I like to buy the crystals. And when you put the salt in your mouth and crush it with your teeth, you're releasing the blood, you're releasing the mineral gases. You don't need much iodine. And there's not much iodine in those crystals. And if you take an iodine supplement, it's out of your body in 20 minutes. So a constant, steady supply of iodine is coming into your body in very small amounts. But because it's constant, because of the salt that you're taking, that helps to maintain your iodine levels. And iodine is the main food used by the thyroid gland. So many people who live right in the middle of this big country of the United States, any country, they often are iodine deficient. You see, even in the sea, when the waves are crashing, the iodine goes into suspension and settles on the coast. And so foods that are grown in coastal areas, they do have a higher iodine content than the food that is grown right in the middle of the country. So some people buy iodized salt. It has three minerals, sodium, chloride, and iodine. But it is estimated within a couple of hours of opening that container, the iodine evaporates. But one of the biggest problems with iodine is mercury fillings. You see, mercury has an affinity for selenium. And iodine needs selenium to convert it to thyroxine. So someone can have mercury fillings in their mouth. Maybe they're eating a lot of fish with mercury in it. And remember, it has an affinity for selenium. And you might be getting iodine, but you're not able to use it if you don't have the selenium. The good news is you only need 5 Brazil nuts a day to get all the selenium that you need in a day. That's why every morning at breakfast I have Brazil nuts. There's no other food that is anywhere near the selenium that you will find in the Brazil nuts. So that's why the Celtic salt is so high in the minerals, because of the way it's harvested. The Bahar salt, that's a hand-harvested sea salt as well on the coast of Brazil, I think it is. But it's also in pristine area as the Celtic salt is. In fact, the French government values that Celtic salt industry so much that it's declared about 400 million acres, heritage acres, so it is not contaminated. That's the good news. And we need minerals. We've been looking at minerals this week. We looked at the DNA and how minerals helps to heal any damage in the DNA. Our bones aren't made of calcium. Our bones are made of minerals. Our bones are made of 12 main minerals and 64 trace minerals. And we get those minerals, yes, by taking that Celtic salt, but also by having dark green leafy vegetables. So minerals are vital. And yet, we have been told so many times, especially if you've got heart problems, high blood pressure, don't take salt. Well, it is true that table salt does cause that imbalance in and out of the cell. But Dr. Jacques de Langres, if he gets someone with high blood pressure, he puts them on the Celtic salt, because what that does is restores the balance. Celtic salt contains three magnesiums. It contains magnesium chloride and magnesium bromide and magnesium sulfate. And now, magnesium is a water-hungry molecule. And that explains why the Celtic salt is so wet. You'll notice it's a very moist salt, especially if we have a lot of rain. Then it'll be even more moist, because magnesium is a water-hungry molecule. It absorbs the water into it. The salt that I use is predominantly the Celtic salt, but the big crystals. If I'm cooking, I put it in at the end of my cooking and it dissolves through. And you can get ceramic grinders and have them at the table and grind them straight on. But I really prefer the crystals because of the mineral gases that are locked up in the crystals. But I want to take you to the cell and show you also what happens in the cell under this magnesium. There's a bilayered membrane around every cell. And in that bilayered membrane, there are sodium-potassium pumps. And these sodium-potassium pumps are constantly basically working like this to maintain potassium and the highest proportion of potassium is found inside the cell, whereas outside the cell, it's sodium. And those sodium-potassium pumps help to maintain that. I always say to people, how much water do you drink? And a lot of people say, not enough, I don't like water. But some people say, well, if I drink water, my legs swell. If I drink water, I'm running to the bathroom too often. Those two answers tell me the water's not getting inside the cell. So how do we get the water inside the cell? When you put a crystal of Celtic salt on your tongue, your mucous membranes absorb the minerals, yes, the three magnesiums, and because of the water-hungry properties of magnesium, then you have some water, and that magnesium pulls the water inside the cell. It's the quickest way to hydrate a body, is to take that little crystal of Celtic salt before each glass of water. So if you have 8 glasses of water a day, you have that little crystal before each glass of water. Also, when we take water, we shouldn't be drinking huge amounts at once. You drink huge amounts at once, it's not long before huge amounts are going to have to come out. It's like a plant. If you have a plant that is dry and you put 16 ounces of water into that plant, it all runs out the bottom. And I know that this has happened sometimes at Misty when I've been there, and the staff have said, see, it wasn't dry after all. And I said, put your finger in. Yeah, it's as dry as a bone. And I was in Utah last week. We were there all week. And that's what they said often happens in Utah. The rain comes down so heavy and the ground is so dry that it actually just runs off and their rivers swell, but the ground actually isn't getting it. Unless it's a lovely light rain. The first drop makes way for the next drop, then the next drop. So when you have 16 ounces of water all at once into your body, into your stomach, then that 16 ounces, not long before it comes out quite quickly. So same as the plant, but I can get 16 ounces in a very dry plant and put a little bit in, a few minutes later another little bit, a few minutes later another little bit, and it might take me 5 minutes, but I can get 16 ounces into that plant and hardly, and maybe right at the end a little bit might be coming out onto the tray. Same with the body. The body can access the water much better if we take it in little by little by little. So this is what I do. I wake up in the morning, I have a little bit of salt, I have half a glass of water. I go to the bathroom, I have another half glass of water. I pray. I have another little bit of salt with my in the beginning of my next glass of water. And again, I have half a glass, then I get dressed, then I have another half a glass of water. So what I do is I spread it out. My usual habit is I wake at 5 and eat at 7, so I've got plenty of time to have water. I don't want to have a lot of water at the end of the day because I don't want to be up all night. I know some people that can have 16 ounces of water before they go to bed and sleep for 8 hours. Not my bladder. It's getting to know your bladder. So what I do is I aim for at least 3, sometimes almost 3.5 glasses of water before I have breakfast. If I wake up at 6:30 and I'm eating at 7, it's going to be difficult to get 3 glasses of water in then. I might get 2, but I try and wake up maybe at least an hour, maybe an hour and a half before I have breakfast. And the reason for that is, and you'll find this tomorrow night when we go on our journey through the gastrointestinal tract, that our stomach is an acid environment. And that acid is required to digest our protein. But if you drink with your meals, you are diluting that acid. So that can inhibit your protein being broken down. And if you inhibit your protein being broken down so it can't be broken down, it actually can end up in the toilet. And it's not even getting absorbed out of your gut. Because as you'll see tomorrow night, it can only be absorbed out of our gut in tiny, tiny little molecules. And we need the acid stomach to be able to do that. So we should be stop drinking about half an hour before the meal, and then resume drinking about an hour and a half to 2 hours after the meal. If you're thirsty after a meal, by all means have a mouthful. A mouthful's not going to make a huge difference. But if you're thirsty just after your meal, it's a clear indication that you began your meal dehydrated. We've talked about the time-restricted eating. We've talked about leaving breaks between the meals. The time-restricted eating is eating twice, 6 hours apart in a 24-hour period. It came out of the intermittent fasting, the 5-2 diet. Eating like that, it's easy. You got lots of time to drink with that. And as you'll find out tomorrow, it takes 3.5 to 4 hours to digest a meal, and then the stomach loves a 1 hour break. And so the time-restricted eating, what it's proving to do, it's proving to be very helpful in conquering diabetes, in weight loss, because the stomach's having a rest. But it is such an American habit, isn't it? Drinking with the meals. That's an Australian habit too. We go to a restaurant, what's the first thing you're asked? What will you drink? No, we won't have anything to drink. Oh, we'll just give you water. Will we let them give us water, otherwise they don't leave us alone. In fact, we've said, no, thank you, we don't need anything. And then a waiter from other tables said, look, I'm terribly sorry that you haven't got water. So we let them put water there, then they leave us alone. Especially with children, it's important to start working on them an hour before the meal. Water, water, water. If any of my children, well, they're all grown now, my grandchildren now, say, I don't want water, I'll say, I'm so sorry, you won't be able to eat breakfast. So you're always very nice. Always very nice. So water's important. But there's a time to drink water. Notice in the Sustain Me principles, it's use of water. Use of water implying there's a time to drink water and there's a time not to drink water. I have a bottle and I think it's 3.5 glasses of water. So I will not eat breakfast till that's drunk. And I will not eat lunch till that's drunk. So I have most of my water before breakfast and before lunch. And then after lunch, I might drink two, sometimes three glasses of water slowly over the afternoon. So it's getting to know your bladder, getting to know what works for you. So water needs that little bit of salt to get into the cell. And if you're having eight glasses of water a day, that's eight little crystals of salt that you're having a day. And by the way, calcium is a very important nutrient, and it can't get into the cell by itself. It needs vitamin D. And we get vitamin D from the sunshine. Did you know that being outside for half an hour exposure on your skin, 20,000 international units of vitamin D? But you've got to make sure there's nothing on your skin. No creams, no potions. In fact, Ian Wishart, he's written several books on vitamin D. He claims that slip, slop, slap, it's Aussie slang, slip a top on, slap a hat on, slop the sunscreen on, slip, slop, slap. He maintains it's created one of the biggest medical disasters. It has not prevented sun skin cancer. In fact, it's almost increased melanomas, because vitamin D deficiency is a big contributing factor with skin cancers. Do you know what people used to do in the old days? They'd get little bits of sun all winter, little bit more in the spring, so by the time the big sun's come, they've got a bit of a tan, which can help them to endure the strong sun. And in the middle of the day, the sun's so strong, you don't even want to be out there in the sun. It's common sense, because if you notice that skin cancer rates, they've only really risen since the Industrial Revolution, when all the sunscreens were created. Have you had a look at the labels, and look at the ingredients on the sunscreens? You don't even know what those words are. They're so big and long. I have never used sunscreen. Yes, I've got what they call milky skin. So when I'm lying out by the pool, yes, Michael and I do have holidays occasionally, I don't take sunscreen, I take my watch. 15 minutes front, 15 minutes back. Yes, now I have got my 20,000 international units of vitamin D, and that's about as much as my skin can handle, and I go under the umbrella. And then I might do that twice a day, and by the end of the week, I've got a very nice UVB tan. What's a UVB tan? It's the UV ultraviolet B rays that the body uses to convert to vitamin D. But also it's the UVB rays that give you a tan. And that tan is protective. So those UVB rays are important, but the sunscreen blocks the UVB rays, and they're the rays, the healing rays that we really need. So vitamin D is present, then calcium can get inside the cell. And when calcium gets inside the cell, all the other minerals piggyback on the back of calcium. Please don't take calcium supplements, because all they often do is end up as bone spurs. Our bones need minerals. Calcium, it's called the king only because all the other minerals piggyback on the calcium when it's taken into the cell. Glucose can't get into the cell by itself. It needs insulin. And insulin is the key that unlocks the door, as we looked at when we looked at diabetes, and gets it into the cell. But you know what happens a lot today? The person's not taking the minerals, they're not taking the whole salt, and actually, by the way, they're usually not drinking enough water, so water's not getting into the cell. And the person's vitamin D deficient, they don't go out in the sun because they're scared they'll get skin cancer, so the calcium and the minerals can't get in. And remember, this is the CBD, and the person's on a high carbohydrate diet, too much glucose being made, so insulin resistance sets up, so the glucose can't get into the cell, so we've got a problem. So what the body usually does now, it says, I know, we'll just force it into the cell. What's that called? High blood pressure. So high blood pressure, and we touched on it last night, can be because of dehydration, can be because of lack of minerals, can be because of lack of vitamin D, can a contributing factor can be the high carbohydrate diet. And so to alleviate this problem, yes, please drink adequate water. We need at least 8 glasses a day. So let's do a breakdown on water loss in a day. I'm going to say litre loss. It's the same as a quart. A quart and a litre are the same, which is 4 glasses of water. So from the kidneys, in a 24-hour, we would lose 1.5 litre loss. From the colon, we lose 0.3 of a litre loss. From the lungs, we lose 0.2 of a litre loss. And from the skin, we lose 0.5 of a litre loss. So in a 24-hour period, we're losing 2.5 litre loss. So that 2 litres, which is 8 glasses, must be replaced. The other half litre can come in the form of our fruits, our vegetables, maybe herb teas. And notice there's no reserve tank on the back. The only water going into the body is the water that we're putting into the body. And sorry, soda drinks won't do it, tea and coffee won't do it, because soda drinks, tea and coffee all contain dehydrating agents. So sorry, it's not going to do it. But when we take that Celtic salt and the water is taken into the cell, something else happens. In this bilayered membrane around the cell, there's a little motor. And that little motor starts spinning when that water rushes through that membrane, and the spinning of that little motor gives us a unit of energy. So if you're feeling tired mid-morning, mid-afternoon, go outside, breathe deeply in your nose and out of your nose underneath a tree. I nearly said gum tree, but you have other trees. Those leaves are giving off oxygen. Take the Celtic salt and have half a glass of water, maybe breathe another 10 breaths in and out and have the other glass of water, and you will find it'll give you a little energy boost. So when everyone else is running outside to have a cigarette and a cup of coffee for their energy, you're taking something that will give you lasting energy. I have a book at home in my library. It's called One of the Body's Many Cries for Water, and it's by a Dr. Batman Geheldige. We'll call him Dr. B. And Dr. B is an Iranian doctor, and he was a political prisoner. I think it was in about the 1980s. And because he was a doctor, all the prisoners would come to him if they had complaints, but he didn't have anything because he's also a prisoner. So he developed a protocol, and if anyone came to him, he'd give them a glass of water. And 15 minutes later, he'd give them another glass of water. 15 minutes later, he'd give them another glass of water. He really just did them because he had nothing else. But what he found is all their problems started to heal. People with migraines started to heal. People with stomach ulcers started to heal. To ease. People with tight asthma attacks have started to ease. People with constipation started to go. And all the inmates were saying, we've got a great doctor, he's fixing us all. And this really surprised him, because he only did it because he had nothing else. So what he did, he started documenting. He started to document all of these cases because it shocked him. And not long after that, the government changed and he was freed. And he said, look, do you mind if I stay a little bit longer? I might in the middle of this fascinating research. He's presented his findings at medical journals, and he wrote the book, One of the Body's Many Cries for Water. He's got two subtitles to the book. He's not sick, he's thirsty. And the other title is Don't Treat Thirst with Medications. And what he discovered is one of the first places that water is taken from in dehydration is the lining of the stomach. You see, this stomach lining is 99% water. That's what mucus is. In a state of dehydration, the body goes into a form of drought management. And what it uses to manage this drought is histamine. And so when histamine levels rise, then the person gets allergy-type responses and they go to the doctor. What does the doctor give them? Antihistamines. And yet sometimes it's just purely because of dehydration. So in dehydration, the body must maintain full blood volume. And so it takes water from different areas, and one place it takes from is the lining of the stomach. And when the stomach lining is reduced, then it's very easy for the hydrochloric acid to start eating away at the stomach lining. And so whenever there's damage, our body's own microorganisms can change roles into a bacterial form. And that bacterial form is called Helicobacter pylori. That's what Helicobacter pylori does. It's just cleaning up the waste from the damage because of dehydration, because the stomach acid is able to start eating away at the lining of the stomach. And so the person goes to the doctor, and what are they given? Antibiotics to kill off the Helicobacter pylori, because all they have to do is a breath test and they can pick it up. So the antibodies come in, kill off Helicobacter pylori, but because the damage is still there, our own microorganisms evolve into more Helicobacter pylori. So I was just, we just had a question there. Ladies had three courses of antibiotics, you still got Helicobacter pylori. What's the definition of insanity? To do what you've always done and expect different results. So I'm going to give you the story of a man that came to our retreat, and he had Helicobacter pylori. It was his fifth month of antibiotics. He'd have antibiotics for 10 days. They'd give him a break for a few weeks, do the breath test, still Helicobacter pylori. So they'd give him another course of antibiotics. He said to me, I've had stomach pain for 25 years. He did not want to be at our health retreat. His wife had paid the full amount, and that's the only reason he came. And every question I asked him, it was yes, no, no. I said, do you want any medication? He said, yes, I'm on a different antibiotic every month for Helicobacter pylori. I said, are you interested in coming off any of your medication? He said, no, thank you very much. I'm very happy with my medication. Now, I always respect a person's choice. I said, how much water do you drink? He said, 2 litres a day. And because he said 2 litres a day, 8 glasses, I thought, oh, well, he's right on the water and he's not very happy about any of my questions, so I just moved on. After the first lecture, where I talked about the body's ability to heal itself when you give it the right conditions, he and his wife both came up to me. He was probably his, I don't know, late 50s. He came up to me and he said, that was very interesting. He said, I'm actually interested in knowing what you would do for my case. I said, well, I can't tell you what to do with your medication, but if I were you, I would stop the antibiotics because this is 5 months and the others haven't done it. He said, yeah, I get that. But he said, I've not known what else to do, and I certainly get that. So what I did was I gave him slippery elm. Slippery elm is a powder bark of the slippery elm tree. It coats and soothes the lining of the gut. At the end of the week, a very happy man was sitting in front of me. He said, I've worked out my problem. I'll love to hear that. Because I believe God designed each one of us to be our own doctors. He said, I've worked out my problem. And he said, by the way, I've had no stomach pain for 2 days. He said, first time in 25 years. I said, tell me what you've worked out. He said, I was drinking a litre of water with every meal. He said, I had no idea. I didn't even think about stomach acid, watering it. He said, I never even thought about it. Everyone drinks with their mouth. So let me show you what was happening. So when he's dehydrated between the meals, so he's got this thin lining, and every time he eats, the body releases the hydrochloric acid. And one of the hydrochloric acid's role is to wipe out unwanted pathogens or bacteria in the stomach. And this hydrochloric acid is just about to wipe that out, and he has a great big glass of water. And what does that do to hydrochloric acid? Waters it right down. So Helicobacter pylori goes, phew, that was close, chomp, chomp, chomp. So at the health retreat, he learnt about the importance of drinking between meals, not with meals. He said it was very hard at first. He kept reaching for the glass, reaching for the glass. That's the habit pathway. So remember, we learnt in our last class, 21 days to form a new pathway. So he learned about the importance of drinking between meals and what that did. In fact, a glass of water half an hour before the meal, one of the first things it does is thicken that lining to the stomach. And then he'd smell food, and hydrochloric acid's released, comes down, wipe out. What had healed him? His body had healed itself. He just started to drink water between meals and not with meals. He would laugh. He'd say, I'm still reaching for the glass. But he said, I get it. I now understand. Proverbs 14, verse 6, the Bible says, knowledge is easy to him that understands. He now understood what was happening to his body. In fact, I think it's one of the most important branches of education is understanding how the body works. And when my arm broke and I sat in casualty for 6 hours in the most terrible pain, why did it take them 6 hours to see me? Because the whole system's chocked up with people, sore finger, I've got a sore elbow, oh, I've got a sore toe, gravy fell on my hand, my heart rate's gone up a bit, oh, my blood pressure's gone high, oh, I feel sick, I can't believe it. I'm sitting here because the whole system is chocked up with people that do not know how to look after their bodies. Now, we're told we're an enlightened age. I think we're dumb. We don't even know how to look after our bodies. I sat there thinking I could fix them. My husband went up and said to them, my wife's been here for 5 hours. She's in a lot of pain. And you know what the nurse said? She's on the fast track. I'd hate to be on the slow track. That's why I say to people, for these little complaints, you know, Sustain Me's got a whole lot of different remedies, little things that you can do. I was confronted with a couple of things. I was confronted with the fact that people have lost the ability to just look after simple little things. And I also was confronted with the fact, now I know why I do what I do, to show people how to look after their bodies. And before the Australian government saw fit to ban me because they consider I'm a threat to public safety, I'll leave that up to you to work that one out. There were four doctors that used to get me to go to their town and teach these simple principles because they knew it would ease emergency. Because I feel so sorry for those doctors and nurses. In emergency, the whole system is just all chucked up with so many little bits and pieces. And I certainly say, if you are concerned, go and have an opinion. But before you go, put a poultice on. Put charcoal on the spider bike. Do these little things. And I have heard reports of the doctor have said, wow, if you hadn't put that charcoal poultice on that snake bite, I don't think you would have survived. But simple little things that you can do. Water. And that's what Dr. B discovered. Water. Water and load. And he claims, at the time of writing his book, that he's healed 3,000 cases of stomach ulcer with water alone. Just water. Because the first thing water does is thickens that mucosa wall. So this man and his wife went home a very happy couple. He'd been all over the world, gone to the top specialists. No one could fix it. I didn't fix it. What fixed it? His body fixed itself when he started giving it the right conditions. If we go further down, we come to the pancreas. And as you'll find out tomorrow, there are a whole lot of enzymes that are released into the gut from the pancreas that finalise digestion. Plus, there are two main hormones that are released into the blood. We looked at them when we looked at diabetes. I think that was Tuesday night. That's the glucagon and the insulin. They are all made out of water. And so if the person's dehydrated, that will compromise the production of insulin. A big contributing factor to diabetes can be dehydrating. Then we come down to the colon, where we're going to go and have a look in detail tomorrow night. One of the main functions of the colon is to take water out so stools are formed. And in the case of dehydration, more water gets taken that should be taken out. And that can be, the result can be constipation. So I was in one Middle Eastern country and I had some princesses visit me. And so they were all robed up. And one young woman, she was about 18, she said, I suffer from terrible constipation. I said, how much water do you drink? She said, oh no, I don't drink water. I said, well, what do you drink? She said, oh, I drink tea and coffee and juice and soda. I said, well, there's a very simple way to heal your constipation, and that is to start drinking water. Well, she wasn't very impressed with my advice. I think she was hoping that I had some tablets that she could take. But water, it's just such a very simple remedy. Urinary tract infection. I've got a girlfriend, and whenever she gets a urinary tract infection, she just starts drinking 4 litres of water a day. Do you know, many women take antibiotics for urinary tract infection, and what they'll find is the next month they'll get another one. So they'll take antibiotics, it'll go away, but then the next month they'll get another one, because what starts to happen is the antibiotic starts to cause the urinary tract infection. So there's a very simple herb, it's called cranberry, and you can find it in large amounts in a product called D-mannos. And even taking a teaspoon every half hour until the urinary tract infection has no pain, and at the same time, huge amounts of water. Please, no more antibiotics. I think antibiotics could be saved for life-saving. And the problem today is most people have taken so many antibiotics that by the time they get a problem that they really need it, they're not working. So as you can see, water is needed for every single body function. Our brain is a hydroelectric system. We looked at that in our last class. No hydro, no electricity. Many people suffer from headaches because of dehydration, because the brain cells can shrink in dehydration. Our lungs. So our lungs, I'll draw one here. The trachea has split and now we're coming into all the little bronchioles. And at the end of every bronchial is like a little bunch of grapes. We looked at this yesterday. And they're the alveoli. We have approximately 300 million of there, and that's where the gaseous exchange takes place. Inside every alveoli is a minuscule droplet of water. And because of the surface tension of water, when we breathe out, it causes that alveoli to totally collapse, which means more of your gaseous waste is breathed out, which means you can breathe in more oxygen. So when you're well hydrated, you're getting more oxygen into your lungs. Oxygen, the most vital element needed for life. In dehydration, often there can be some alveoli that just don't have enough moisture, which means when you breathe out, you don't breathe out all the waste, which means when you breathe in, not much oxygen can be taken in because there's already some gaseous waste in those alveoli. It's very important to ensure that you're getting adequate oxygen, that you have a very good exhale. Start counting your exhale, count to five. Then you can breathe in more. Now the next exhale, try and count to 10. In fact, I was reading in some breathing exercises, some people can get up to breathing out to the count of 100. And then breathe in. And what they have found, that athletes, when they teach them to breathe properly, are getting better times in their games purely because they're breathing properly. So breath is very important because that's how we get our oxygen. But to get adequate oxygen, we need to be drinking adequate water. So that little droplet of water is in every alveoli. Our joints, the fluid around our joints. So I can open and close my hand without pain because there's synovial fluid around every joint. And that synovial fluid is 99% water. So dehydration can be a contributing factor in arthritis, in gout. 75% of our upper body weight is held in our lower back by water. The other percentage is held by our muscles and our ligaments. So if we're dehydrated, one of the symptoms can be lower back pain. Remember what Dr. B said? He's not sick, he's thirsty. Don't treat thirst with medication. So my husband Michael's got a friend who is a bricklayer. And he was talking, his name's Jerry, and he was talking to Michael one day, and he was saying to Michael, "Oh, I've got this terrible lower back pain," and all the guys on the job site, they're bricklayers, they all complain of this back pain. And Michael said, "What do you drink?" He said, "Coke." He said, "How much Coke do you drink a day?" He said, "Oh, probably 2-3 litres. Michael said, "What about the other guys on the job site?" He said, "Yeah, we all drink Coke." Michael said, "Oh, well, that's the cause of your back pain." And Jerry said, "Oh, as if." Michael said, "I've got a challenge for you, mate. Stop the Coke and drink water and watch what happens." And Jerry said, "I'm going to do it just to prove you wrong." So he went to the job site and he says, "Oh, I've got this mate who reckons that our back pain's because we don't drink water." So my suggestion is we give it a try. Well, they grumbled and complained a bit, but they all chose to drink water. And after 4 days, Jerry rang up Michael and said, "We can't believe it. Our back pain's gone." Their back pain was due to dehydration. You can have 10 people who are all dehydrated, they're only drinking 1 or 2 glasses of water a day, and they can have different symptoms. One will have headaches, one will have depression, one will have a congested chest, one will have lower back pain, one will have constipation. So it can be have different effects in different people. So we had a man attend our program, and he was 44 and he had 3 main problems: chronic headaches, chronic lower back pain, and a congested chest. And I said, how much water do you drink a day? He said, I don't drink water. I don't meet many people that don't drink any water. I said, well, what do you drink? He said, a bit of Coke, a bit of coffee, a bit of tea. And he's on headache tablets every day. I think if that man hadn't come to us at his age, by the age of probably in another 10 years, he'd just about be on dialysis. I said to him, well, I said, I think your problem is dehydration. And he laughed. But at our retreat, there's no tea and there's no coffee and there's no soda pop. So he's drinking more water, and he's having a steam sauna at the end of every day, which makes you very thirsty. So he's drinking a lot more water, he's having the salt. At the end of the week, I had a very happy man in front of me. He said, my lower back pain's gone. He said, my chest is clearer. And he said, I have had no headache for the last 2 days. First day had a bit of a headache because he's coming off the Coke and all the caffeine drinks. But by Thursday, so I guess come in Sunday, so by Thursday he had no lower back pain and he had no headache, which means he didn't have to have the pain-killing medication for the headaches, the Tylenol, the ibuprofen, which further damages the kidneys and further damages the liver. He was a very happy man. I saw him 6 weeks later because he was so excited about the program. Bit by bit, he got his other workers to come and do the program. I saw him 6 weeks later. And he jumped out of the car. He had this big smile on his face. He said, I don't get headaches anymore. I'd have no more lower back pain. And he got this big bottle. He said, 4 litres a day. Cheap medicine. Cheap medicine is just water. You just got to find out how to get it in. But the fact is, we need at least 8 glasses of water a day. Little by little, ideally between meals, and to access it more effectively, to take that crystal of Celtic salt. Where do we get our potassium? Looking at the 4 most vital elements needed for life, potassium is found in abundance in all your fresh fruits and vegetables, especially in your dark green leafies. We should be having dark green leafy vegetables every single day. Have a big salad every day. So leafies, and we've got so many leafy greens. We've got rocket, we've got kale, we've got spinach, we've got silver beet, and I know down south they have collard greens. We've never heard of them in Australia. And lamb's quarters, that's another green that they have. So there's so many different greens. And when you cook the greens, you do not lose the minerals, as long as you don't throw the water away. So minerals are vital. We get the minerals in our salt. We get our minerals in our dark green leafy vegetables. And when we're having this balance of food, this balance of minerals, this balance of vegetables and the right salt, that maintains a correct balance. As I said, the only time there will be an imbalance is when the table salt is taken. They did some experiments with table salt. See, to make up seawater, it's a teaspoon to a cup of water. So they made up a whole fish tank of seawater using the table salt. And then they got fish from the sea and put it into that water, and all the fish died. Another indication of the importance of the whole salt. In Matthew 5, verse 13, the Bible says, "Ye are the salt of the earth. If the salt has lost its savour, wherewith shall it be salted? It is now good for nothing but to be cast out and trodden under foot of men." How does salt lose its savour? I'd like to suggest that this table salt's lost its savour. It's lost all the other minerals. And you'll find children love salt. So my little grandchildren come to my purse because they know I've got a little container of salt. They get that salt. And when you give them salt, what's the next thing they do? they go and reach for their water. And our palate tells us the importance of salt. What's baked potato without salt? And lentils aren't very nice without salt. And avocado and tomato on sourdough bread. Yes, our palate tells us that we need salt. So we need salt and we need water. What type of water? The best water is pure water, is rainwater. If you're living in the city, you may need to get a water filter. I do hear that Robert Kennedy Jr. is looking at taking fluoride out of your water. That's very good news. Very good news. Because there is no point in it being in the water. Does it strengthen the teeth? Only the outer dentine. And it only strengthens it if it touches it. That's why we don't need to drink it. And a dentist said to me one day, he got a 10-year-old girl and she had one little spot on her tooth. He started to drill and the whole tooth exploded. It was rotten to the core, but the outer dentine was hard because of fluoride. So we need to have strong teeth from the very core. So what causes teeth to be strong from the very core? Minerals. Minerals, back to the salt, back to the dark green leafies. So I took my children to the dentist. I think the youngest was about 4, the oldest was about 15, and the dentist said, "Your children's teeth astonish me. Their teeth are so strong. I never gave them fluoride. We lived in a rainforest and we had water from the creek and from the sky. And we ate a lot of vegetables out of the garden, so they were very high in minerals." You see, that's what strengthens teeth, is the minerals, not the fluoride. And the fluoride, because we drink it, it's in washout, it's everywhere, which makes no sense at all. It is very harmful on the kidneys, it's very harmful on the liver, and also it can contribute to calcification of the pineal gland. And the pineal gland is that gland in the brain that releases the serotonin, the melatonin, helps us to sleep better at night. And they are all also found that people with Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, the pineal gland starts to calcify. So the fluoride should never be in water. But the reverse osmosis is a type of filter that gets the fluoride out. Chlorine, you can pour your water and put it on the bench for several hours. The chlorine does evaporate. So yes, it's important to have the purest water possible and have water filters in your home. I'm often asked about alkaline water. Well, the alkaline water machines are very, very expensive. Alkaline water, yes, it is good water, but please don't drink it with your meals because it'll really negate your stomach acid. But I personally don't think that it's worth buying the alkaline water machine because it's a lot of money. You can alkaline your water with a squeeze of lemon. You can alkaline your water by putting a good filter on it. But yes, good water is important, and when water tastes good, you're more likely to drink it. I think you'll agree with me.